Jack, you okay? Where are you?
Down Bastard Hole. Left riverbed. Went past big rock. Big as me. Stepped on brush and went in.
You hurt?
It's a trap, Ryan. Sharp spike branches in pit here.
Stepping as if walking on eggshells, Ryan picked his way forward, seeing the large boulder looming ahead of him. He strained his good eye and could make out the dark shape of the pit trap. Jack, how deep?
6 feet, maybe. Broke chest bones, Ryan. Can't stand. Can't.
Ryan decided that he needed a light from the fire and as fast as possible. He turned around and stared into the glowing emerald eyes of an enormous mutie cougar, which stood less than 10 feet away from him. The P-226 leapt into Ryan's fist before he'd even consciously thought that he'd better draw it from the hip. It fitted there like an extension of his arm. In the dim light, it wasn't possible to see the exact size of the animal. Its tawny skin seemed to glow faintly. It was around 16 feet from its jaws with a glistening saber teeth to the squat bunched muscles at the end of its back, and had to weigh in at around 700 pounds of mean.
Back off, bastard.
Over the years, Ryan had encountered any number of muties, animals and humans, and some that lay somewhere between. A lot of them would respond to the threat of an armed man. The mountain lion hunkered down on its haunches, long tail flicking angrily from side to side. Ryan's eye, away from the bright embers of the fire, was becoming more accustomed to the darkness of the creek bed. He kept staring at the unblinking green eyes of the huge creature as he took a cautious half-step toward it.
Get out of here! Come on! I got an ace on the line with you!
The barrel of the Sig Sauer was steady on the puma's jaws. The best target, with the best margin for a close hit, if the big cat moved suddenly in any direction. Its mouth opened with an infinite slowness, and Ryan could taste the hunting scent of the big meat-eater's breath. Ryan had never seen a carnivore of such a size. Its lethal, curling tusks sprouted from the upper jaw, twisting and pointing forward and up. If it came for him, the pistol wouldn't stop the attack. It might kill the animal, but it was too close not to be able to rip out Ryan's belly before it was dead. If it would turn, then he could shoot it, knowing it wouldn't then be able to twist and power itself at him. He waved the gun. The tail stopped twitching, and he could see the powerful muscles along its back tensing, ready for a spring. Ryan got himself braced to shoot for the head and dive sideways at the same time, hoping it wouldn't come to that. The mutie cougar erupted toward him. The broad trigger was firm, and Ryan squeezed it twice. Ryan had no way at all of knowing where the bullets had hit the animal. He knew with absolute certainty that he couldn't have missed at such close range. In the darkness, near the brink of the pit, he could dimly make out the thrashing shape of the cougar. It was crouched, ready to spring again. Black in the moonlight, Ryan could see blood pouring from a gaping wound in its throat, slightly to the right, toward the shoulder. There was no sign of a second wound. It wasn't the time to risk a poor shot. Ryan steadied his right wrist with his left hand, extending the P-226 like the finger of the avenging angel, and leveled it at the broad, thrusting head of the mountain lion. He snapped off 5 quick shots, spaced 1/3 of a second apart to allow for any recoil. In the moonlight, he saw the skull of the puma explode into shards of splintered bone and brain, blood and tissue erupting in a fine mist. The cougar fought its way to its feet, staggering, destroyed. Then the lions went down and it toppled sideways, claws scraping on the bare rock.
Fire blast.
To recover from the violent tension, Ryan stayed kneeling, fishing out ammunition from his pants pocket.
Ryan! You okay? Ryan!
I'm here, lover. Watch your step. Jack's gone into a trap and broken some ribs.
What was the shooting?
Mutie lion snuck up on me. I chilled it. Could be a pair, so watch the brush.
The lion still rules the Barranca.
Where's the pit?
Just ahead, by that big boulder. Fuck it. Moon's going in again. Lori, go get a burning branch. Doc, go with her. We'll need light to get the kid out.
Don't call me kid, you one-eyed bastard.
At least the run ain't dead.
It took the careful efforts of the other 5, working as a team, to get him out of the hole. The flames from the makeshift torches showed how close he'd come to a brutal ending. The pit was around 6 feet deep, with sharpened spikes of wood, thick as a baby's arm, set around the bottom. Being skinny and small, Jack had slithered in between the stakes, his chest catching a glancing blow on one of them. As Ryan lifted him out, passing the boy's light body up to JB, Jack winced and then went suddenly limp. Peeling off the ragged vest, Christy probed carefully. She touched him on his left side.
Not good. One, maybe two broken ribs. Could have something damaged inside. Stomach, maybe his liver. I'm not a doctor.
Nor am I, my dear. Science at Harvard and then philosophy at Oxford, England. Not a jot nor a tittle of medicine.
Maybe we should let him rest up. Or get him back to the redoubt.
Laurie sat in the dirt by the side of the semi-conscious boy and held his small hand in hers.
His face is white as thin white.
Got any panties, JB? I recall you used to have some.
Sure I did, back on the war wags. All gone. I haven't seen any since way before Moxon. Best let him sleep. See how he is in the morning.
Sure. After that big muty cat, I guess we double up. I'll take until 2. Christy take until 4 with JB, and Doc and Laurie through till dawn. At any sign of anything, anything, wake everyone up. And keep an eye on Jack.
Jack slept fitfully through the night. At dawn, Laurie gently shook Ryan awake.
First light.
Sleeping out in the open, without even a horse blanket for cover, was second nature to him. He got used to it, used to waking stiff, muscles cramping, often with your clothes sodden from overnight dew, and always cold. The sand beneath him was still dry, but the boulders and the trunks of the cottonwoods glistened with water. The sun was barely over the eastern rim of the hills, showing pink, with a halo spread around it like a great circular rainbow.
How's Jack?
Just awaked. Christy is checking him.
Christy, how's he doing?
Not so good.
Fever?
Yeah, being he's albino, you can't tell if he's flushed or not. But his skin's dry as sand and he feels like he's burning up. Says his chest hurts. You can hear him draw breath.
What kind of noise?
Hear for yourself, lover. Come on.
Ryan stood, tightening the laces on his combat boots, rubbing at the thickening stubble on his chin. He followed Christy. Doc was pushing a couple of self-heats in among the smoldering embers of their fire, trying to get them beyond tepid warmth. Laurie stood, shoulders hunched, peering into the mist that lay in the hollows of the land way off to the north, shrouding the peaks of the rounded mesas. JB squatted beside Jack. The boy's face was as white as ever, but his red eyes caught Ryan's approach, and he tried to sit up. The armorer gently pushed him back down again, glancing up at Ryan.
Kid's not so good.
Don't call me.
Oh. See what I mean?
Jack lay down, eyes closing. Ryan noticed that the young lad's fingers were twisting and knotting on his chest, as if they were possessed of a life of their own. He knelt down, feeling the coolness of the earth on his hands. He listened to Jack's breathing. The movements of his chest were shallow and rapid. As the sunlight grew stronger, Ryan noticed, to his alarm, that Jack's natural pallor was becoming tinged with a pastel blue around the lips and below the fluttering eyes.
He's dying.
No, no, Ryan!
Laurie, I'm real sorry about this, but you can look at him. There's some kind of damage to his guts.
Help him!
Doc took Laurie gently by the arm.
I fear that what our leader says is all too true, my dearest child. No doubt a reputable surgeon could pluck the boy from the jaws of Hades, but none of us possesses sufficient skill in the arts of medicine.
We can all save he, all of us.
I fear not.
What if we got him back to the gateway?
Broken ribs, and something worse broke inside him. There's drugs and all that, but we don't...
When we rode the warwags with Trader, there was a medic around. Kathy on Warwag 1. But me and JB, we just don't have that kind of skill at saving lives.
Just at killing.
Christy turned away from Ryan and walked through the grove of shimmering cottonwoods toward the dried riverbed. He followed her, catching up near the tangled deadfall. She turned around and held up a hand.
I know, lover, I shouldn't have said it. I know that. But to see a boy of 14 dying in front of us, it's not right, Ryan.
Nobody ever said it had to be right, Christy. You know that.
Yeah, I do. It doesn't mean I have to like it, though. So what do we do?
Rig a travois. Use branches from the cottonwoods. We'll haul Jack down to the trail. It looked well traveled. We wait and hope someone comes along. Someone who can help him.
If nobody comes?
I guess he'll be dead by sunset.
It didn't take long to build a crude stretcher that two of them could drag along, its ends bouncing over the rough ground.
This contraption reminds me of the time I visited with the Apaches as a young man. But then they'd used ponies to pull the travois.
Sure wish we'd got us a horse, Doc. Or even a half dozen of them.
Jack feverishly threw his head from side to side, the long white hair tangling, stained with orange dust.
Let's stop, JP. I need the time to the travois to stop him rolling off.
As Ryan secured a length of cord around the boy's chest, Jack's eyes snapped open.
Watch for gators, Pa.
Stay easy, Jack.
Ryan?
Yeah, Jack, I'm right here.
Ryan, if I don't make it, being good, all of you, good.
Is he gone? He looks...
No, still breathing, but it's shallow and real fast. He's baking up.
It was a little after 10 o'clock in the morning when they finally reached the trail and laid the travois in the shade of a giant saguaro. There was a low butte a half mile to the north, commanding a view all across the wide valley.
I'm going up there for a rec, see if there's any sign of life. Keep watch down here. I'll be back soon.
Bushes of milky loco weed dotted the desert, scattered in clumps among the cactus. Ryan walked briskly away from his friends, boots crunching through the soft sand. A scorpion scuttled from the heavy approach of the man, tail curved menacingly over its back. In his heart, Ryan felt that Jack was almost certainly doomed. Sure, miracles happened, but they didn't happen very often. It was difficult to tell with the albino, but Ryan suspected that the boy was hemorrhaging from some internal injury. In the heat of New Mexico, even in the shadows, he was burning up. They'd given him all the water they could spare during the morning, but it was just impossible to get his temperature down near normal. Ryan eased the G12 across his shoulders. The ground was already rising ahead of him as he reached the bottom of the butte. Though he hadn't mentioned his fears to the rest of the group, Ryan was only too aware that the owners of the horses that had pitted the trail might not be too friendly. Like so many elements of life in the Deathlands, you could only worry about crossing the bridge when you came right up to it. Ryan ran his fingers through his hair, wincing at the amount of grit that matted it. Sweat was trickling down inside the patch over his left eye, and he eased it away, tentatively rubbing at the puckered socket. The salt and perspiration always made his eyes sore. As far as he could see in any direction, there didn't seem to be any sign of life. There wasn't even a bird circling in the delicate blue of the sky. His wrist chron showed it was just short of 11 o'clock. He decided to rest there for a few minutes, maybe wait until noon. Then he would rejoin the others, and they could wait together for death to claim the 14-year-old boy. The numbers on his wrist chron crept around toward 12, and still he waited. Ryan flapped his hand at a sleek, striped bee that was hovering near the back of his neck. He had heard tales from the south of the Deathlands of swarms of fierce killer bees that would attack cattle and people and sting them to death. He stood, brushing dirt from his pants, and looked around to see if the bee was the harbinger of a deadly swarm. But the sky was clear and untouched. It was very close to midday, and things didn't look good for Jack. The sun hung directly overhead, reducing his shadow to a tiny circle of sharp darkness that puddled his boots. The temperature felt like it was way over 100. It looked like nobody was going to travel the trail that day. Ryan took a last look around. He hesitated, shading his eye with his hand. Over to the northwest, just visible behind a crooked-backed mesa, he could see a small pillar of swirling orange and gray dust. Ryan watched it for a few seconds longer, making sure that it wasn't one of the natural dust devils whipped up by the erratic wind. But it continued unabated. He turned and jogged slowly down the face of the butte to rejoin the others.
They're about 5 miles off. Couldn't see any other trail, so they have to pass this way.
We gonna wait here? Not much good for defense.
But if we move back there, where the slope of land is, under the ridge of that mesa,
We should be able to find some cover.
Will that not leave our rear a trifle exposed?
Yeah, but that trail's ahead of us. If they try to circle, then we can see them good and clear. As long as we don't get anyone else coming up behind us.